Yeah, early on in my career, or my, I should say before my career, early on in my journey, you know, sometimes you have these phrases, you hear it, and just like a light bulb goes off, and like a whole new world opens up in front of you. So for me, that phrase was multiple streams of income. I heard that phrase and it was like, wow, like that's it. That's what I want. And what it means, multiple streams of income doesn't just mean having, you know, 1,000 doors, because if all of it is dependent on the same underlying performance, it's not really multiple, it's really a single stream of income.
That could be
To have
argued.
multiple streams of income, you have to be, you know, if one fails, something else is going to work. But this past, I won't call it a recession, but this past downturn, our best performing asset that we had in our portfolio was office, not multifamily. Our collections in office were at 100%.
Your network is your net worth. Come listen to some of the most successful people I know. Share invaluable knowledge, stories, and advice in real estate, business, and beyond. This is Weiss Advice. Whether you want to take your business or personal life to the next level, look no further. Welcome back to Weiss Advice. I am your host, Yona Weiss, and today I have with me a very special guest, David Prale, all the way out in Israel. How you doing, David?
You got well, Yona. How you doing?
I'm doing great. It's so great to talk with you. I love to meet up with you whenever we can. Coffee, which is long overdue, but we would love to, you know, our listeners to get a little insight into what you got going on and how we can learn from your experience. And hopefully this conversation will be beneficial to those people. So thank you for joining us and I hope to, you know, just jump in.
All right. Thanks for having me.
A little context. I mean, David has been in real estate for quite a while. Back in 2013, he was a mortgage broker for quite a while and worked with a lot of smaller investors. In 2016, he founded YDLP Investments, which is really an incredible platform. And I love this. And I love the journey that you share. And, you know, we've been friends for a few years now, especially with the help of LinkedIn, where we originally met. And you have done 16 over the past couple of years, right? 16 deals that you have helped investors place capital. And you have something unique, I think at least, that is you're able to help foreign investors, right? A lot from Israel, invest in the United States with small amounts. Whereas, you know, a lot of times these large investment deals, syndications and things like that, which is what you're doing, you have to have a starting point, you know, 50,000, 100,000 just to get in. And you've kind of leveled the playing field for a lot of people.
That's kind of the goal there. My tagline on LinkedIn is the $10,000 commercial real estate investments. My favorite deal was a deal we did a couple summers ago where it was a $125 million purchase with $30 million of equity. And we were bringing in people at $10,000 and $20,000, which was...
Right. So you weren't bringing in the entire, you know, $30 million of equity, but, you know, that piece. But I think it's important because it gives people opportunities, you know, without the crowdfunding and without the thing, you know, all these things that are a little confusing, you with a very personal touch that you have to the investor relations that allows you to educate people and kind of help people who are kind of starting out in their investment. Would you say that a lot of the investors that you have in your investor base are, you know, started with you as like a first time investment?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I have a lot of first time investors, first time real estate investors. I have quite a few people who've invested in many things, but real estate's always been this exotic type of thing that they haven't really looked at much. And now I think there's a lot of buzz around real estate the last couple of years, which I'm sure once there's another crash, it'll die out again and take time to rebuild. But there's definitely a lot of interest in real estate, and I have a lot of experienced investors and non-experienced investors who are coming into real estate for the first time.
Interesting. So why do you think that is, that there's such this exotic take? I mean, the alternative investment of real estate that people have not, you know, just not been exposed to?
Probably when, you know, you're getting started. So first of all, if you're coming up in the U.S., and I do have a lot of investors in the U.S., and if you're coming up and through the ranks there, so, you know, the whole plan is, and you get your job and you have your IRA and your 401k and everything goes into the market, into these structured investment vehicles, and real estate's just not really there. And so everyone's always got, you know, like the uncle who like bought a house and he's doing really well with it. But it's like, okay, you got to know what you're doing for that. Mm-hmm. So there's the comfort zone. And also you, when you're getting started, you can invest in the stock market with not a lot of money. So, you know, that's where a lot of people kind of start off and they get comfortable there. And it's easy. Real estate is much more complicated. You have to obviously put much more on the line. And before crowdfunding came around, even with crowdfunding, it's complicated. It's not just complicated. It's oftentimes prohibitive, the limitations they place on you.
Right.
So, you know, any decent deal, as you said, 50, 100, I work with people who have $250,000 to $500,000 minimum investments.
Right. Those are really not only that, a lot of these crowdfunding sites, you have to be an accredited investor just to get on board.
Right. So that's what I was saying before, is that the Reg CF, I mean, it's kind of started with Reg CF, which is a regulation under which you can raise money. It very much limits. They recently loosened it a little bit, but it very much limits how much money you can actually raise from non-accredited investors.
Right.
So either it becomes not worthwhile to do it, or on the flip side, it's not really worthwhile for the non-accredited investor to invest because they only put so much money in to begin with. So if you're investing, you know, in real estate, $5,000 a year, which was the cap used to be, so you know it's not really going to get you very far.
Right.
I mean, if you're a Grant Cardone and you do a, and this is what he did. He did a raise one time for non-accredited investors. So he had tons of them come in. I don't know how many hundreds of thousands come in. So he was able to raise tens of millions of dollars with these little $5,000 investments. But for the actual investor, I'm not sure how much it's doing.
Right. And are you seeing, I mean, you mentioned kind of in passing that there's been some updates and some kind of leniencies to the regulations that have been, you know, placed around crowdfunding and around raising capital in general that the SEC has spoken about. Can you talk a little bit about what has changed recently?
Yeah. So there's some really interesting changes to the rules. I mean, one of them, which is they changed the limit on when a raise has been done. So once a month has gone by, you can raise again for the same underlying asset under a different regulation, which can be very helpful depending on how you want to raise your money. More importantly, I think to me, the most important change they made is, and I've spent a lot of time trying to figure out exactly what that means practically, and I'll probably have to just do it myself in order to learn it, is they've allowed now for people with certain financial qualifications mm-hmm. to be qualified as accredited. So for something like a Series 7, that requires sponsorship from a FINRA certified firm. And so it's a little more complicated to get, but there's something called a Series 65, which is about 30 to 40 hour training course. And then you can take the exam. It's, I think even online, I saw the opportunity to take the exam online. And from what I understand, you end up as a registered investment advisor. I don't think you have to do anything else, but I don't want to certify that yet because I haven't been able to get clear clarity from anybody I've spoken to about this. But once you have that Series 65, you're an accredited investor.
Wow.
Which means now all you need to do to become an accredited investor and to have access to a lot of these opportunities out there is just spend the time getting educated.
That's so interesting. There's probably limitations that come along with that, I would assume. You know, when you become certified and you have some sort of license, like you mentioned, Series 65 license with the, you know, Securities and Exchange Commission, what does that limit you? I mean, you're now regulated by...
That's a good question. I'm not sure. If I were to go for it. So there's two ways that you can make money in the financial services industry. You can either make money as a broker or as an advisor. So as a broker, you make money on the deal. You make your commissions like a realtor. Mm-hmm. And then as an investment advisor, you can charge fees. So that's one question. Would I be able, if I were to do this, would, so it wouldn't really affect me because a lot of the way I make my money is through management fees of the actual LLCs that I create. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's going to have an impact on me. And the other question is, I haven't been able to get clarity from people on this. And maybe someone listening to me knows and they can know a little more than I do. And that'd be great if I can get the answer. Is with the Series 7, you have to certify, you have to register. I'm not sure with the Series, I haven't seen anywhere with the Series 65 that you do. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure. Right. So I'm not sure exactly how that would play out. I'm still kind of exploring the space. I haven't seen a lot of people talking about it yet. I've seen some buzz about it.
It is relatively new. So obviously.
Yeah. Just from June. Yeah. So to me, like that's the biggest opportunity is to kind of go that Series 65 route. And then, you know, a lot of it's good financial education anyway.
Right.
Some of it's going to be the regulatory stuff and the rules that you're not going to really going to need if you're doing it just for yourself, but it's not a lot. It's not a big hurdle to get over to become accredited.
Yeah. So let's back up a little bit. How did you come across real estate originally that you found that this is, you know, first of all, that this is an asset class that I need to get into, I need to start investing in for myself, okay? And then before we even get to how then you started bringing on other people to join you on the journey.
Yeah, so actually it was kind of by accident. I actually started investing in the stock market back in, I bought my first stock back in January 2009.
That was a great time.
Yeah, it was a great time. Oh my gosh. I made so much money not knowing what I was doing. It was unbelievable. And so I was in the stock market for a while. I'm still in the stock market. I love the stock market. We don't need to talk about GameStop.
No.
And...
Because this is going to air like in a month from now, hopefully.
Okay. So I was in the stock market for a while. Then I started working. When I started working, I kind of fell into mortgages. It was a sales position, which, I mean, I'm a big believer in sales positions. You're starting off, you're trying to build your career, start in a sales position, learn how to sell. That is an invaluable skill. So I went into mortgages and I was doing that. And I had this vision in my mind that through mortgages, I'd be able to help people out. I have this mission where I want to help people with their finances. Especially a lot of people aren't informed. A lot of people don't know what opportunities are out there. So I kind of went into mortgages in that route. And I saw over time that the real way to actually make a living in mortgages is to focus on those high net worth clients. So by the time I was leaving, my last client was like an 8 million shekel mortgage, which was great. But it wasn't really what I had in mind when I started off. And it wasn't really what I enjoyed the work, but it wasn't what I had a passion for. So around that time, already half a year before that, I started shifting over into creating this investment house. And I spent a lot of time thinking about where do I want to help people place their money, because I knew there were opportunities out there. I knew there were lots of ways to invest. Mm-hmm. The stock market had its complications and its challenges. So I kind of gravitated towards real estate because it's, you know, there's a rule I learned early on in my days in buying stocks, and that was, always know where your money's coming from. And you have to know what's generating your profits. What caused the crash in 2009 or 2008 is that nobody understood where the money was coming from. They had these derivatives on top of derivatives, and nobody, you lost track of where the value was. No one knew where the money was being generated. So you buy a stock, the rule, you have to understand the company, how the company works. The company is so complicated that you don't even know how they're generating money. That may not be a good buy. Mm-hmm. Real estate is simple. You know, at its core, what it is you own an asset, it's rented out, cash flows in.
Right.
And you can get more complicated. And obviously, operating it properly requires a lot more expertise. But the basic concept is simple enough. The asset never goes to zero. It's very solid. It's illiquid, which for a lot of non-sophisticated investors is actually a plus, because you can't just, you know, bail out on it when things go bad. And it's typically run by some very sophisticated people, depending on the type of deal you're going into. So I kind of, that's where I shifted towards real estate. I tried doing something in Israel at first. But the profits here just weren't.
Really difficult.
It's a really tough market here.
Also, because it's totally different. I mean, a lot of our listeners are coming from the United right. States, obviously. So it's difficult to explain in context, right? All of the different things.
I'll explain it in 1 minute, actually, if you don't mind.
Mortgages are, go ahead. Tell me.
Cost of housing is a very simple statistic. In the US, the average house costs about 2.5 years of salary. In Israel, the average house costs about 12 and a half years of salary.
Yeah, there you go.
That drives cap rate down. Put that together with limited financing options, and it's hard to make a profit.
Very limited financing options. And in terms of commercial real estate as well, it's very limited financing options. I think the only people that I know that make money in real estate in Israel are developers.
Yes.
And so there's a lot of demand for development and the resale, obviously, because those sale prices are so high, that's where they're, you know, making their money.
Right. Well, now then you get into the whole supply and demand thing, which is based on our social.
Of course.
Yeah. Anyway, but we digress.
Yeah.
So I tried something in Israel, and then once I saw that the challenges here to actually make a profit for people was too hard, I turned my attention to the US, and that's where we've been ever since.
Right. So obviously you are, you come from the United States, obviously originally, right? You grew up in New York, and it's been in Israel for how long now?
12 and a half years.
12 and a half years. Now, when you are investing in the United States, obviously you're not going about it on your own, because it's very difficult, not impossible, but very difficult to invest out of state, out of country, especially when you're doing larger multifamily, commercial, right, self-storage, retail, office, all the different types of properties that you are investing in these larger deals. I mean, how do you go about doing that? I mean, in terms of finding partners,
So partners are the most important thing here. You know, as we say, you bet on the jockey, not the horse. You really have to be working with the right people. So I work with a local partner here who's been in the field for 15 years. And between our connections, we have some very, very strict criteria as to how we take on new partnerships. We had some experience early on where we made some mistakes and we learned from those very rapidly. And since then, we haven't had any issues with mismanagement. We recently had a situation come up where we were looking closely at a deal, and my partner was very taken with the deal. It was a very solid deal, and it will probably work out very well. But the operation, the managers had only 5 years experience each, and that was just far too below our criteria. And we cut it. We said we can't compromise on our standards because we there's a reason why we have the rules that we have, mm-hmm. and so we're a little pickier, and sometimes that challenges our deal flow.
Right.
But, it really bears out in years like this year when we had a lot of challenges and properties, especially we had a number of retail properties that are still not paying out what they were targeted originally. Mm-hmm. And we closed on a retail property last year back in November. We had one payout and then we had a whole year with nothing. And now we had a little payout again. So we're starting to pay out again on that property. And it was a huge challenge. But when you're working with people who have the experience to go through those challenges, and the operations in place to handle it, you have a degree of transparency. They show you everything. They know what's going on. You see how they're handling the situation. The rigor in which you bet your partners really plays out in those scenarios, in those situations. So you got to be very careful who you work with. And, that's you start slow and you build trust over time.
Are there anything you can share, any of those crazy stories or some of those crazy mistakes early on that you stumbled across that you wouldn't mind sharing? Dig deep into the memory bank.
Yeah, no.
Really, things that you've already locked away.
This is, I can tell you a billion. In real estate, there's one that really stands out. We took a partnership with somebody based on the following criteria: that they had 10 years experience, they had experience, and we were recommended on their honesty by people who we trusted, not people who were familiar with real estate. And we also knew that they were taking a lot of money from close friends and family for these type of deals. So we kind of had this thesis that, they really believed in it because, if something went wrong, they'd be hurting all their friends and family.
Right.
I'm talking like siblings. Mm-hmm. As it was, the deal did not go according to plan. We suffered a loss. We that was the deal we invested alongside our investors. It was the first time trying someone out. We put in money, so we suffered a loss as well, and it was painful. And in looking over that deal, one lesson that we learned is we stopped taking recommendations from people not in real estate. I don't care how well you know the person. I need to know. Any referral to work with a partner has to come from somebody in real estate, because those are people who actually know the business and they can engage, they can engage the people. It's a lot different taking the recommendation from a doctor or from a friend of yours and from a doctor. So
right.
The same thing plays in this. You got to have the industry knowledge, and someone who's in the field knows you. So now how are we developing our network? We're developing our network through our real estate network and through referrals within our real estate network. But that was one of many lessons learned.
One of many lessons, absolutely. So what's one of those ways that right now you're finding, coming across and finding new partners? Is it just through word of mouth or are you networking? I mean, how are you doing that?
Yeah, so I know we're kind of tapping. Thank God we've had a good couple of years now. And once you have a certain amount of momentum, once you've closed on a certain amount of money, we can then, it allows us to go to some of our partners and some of the people in the field and one of your bosses and talk to them about, introducing us to people. And we bring enough value to sponsors who are looking to raise money that they're happy to make those introductions.
Interesting. So that's, I mean, that's really what it's all about. I mean, it just, it's one leads to the other, right? I mean, one leads
all relationships. It's all relationships. I don't need to tell you about this.
You don't need to. It's true. I definitely have a lot of experience with that. You know, the relationships, and that's where opportunities come. The more you network, the more opportunities come.
Yeah.
Right now, with everything that's gone on in the past year, have you reshifted your focus in terms of which type of assets you are looking to invest in, you know, in the future? Because I know the way that you look at things is kind of in a long term. I mean, you look at it, you look, and we've discussed this many times in the past, like you look long term. You're not looking for short term returns necessarily.
Right. So we're doing a couple of things. The first thing is I put a hold on retail for a little while. I had a retail deal come my way a couple months ago, so I didn't touch it at that point. Right now, we're kind of, you know, if retail comes up, if it's the right deal, we'll do it. But it's really got to check out. We put a penalty on Blue States. We're being very careful with the Blue States. I'm kind of hoping that everyone kind of takes their lesson from New York, but people don't always take lessons.
Never know.
And other than that, it hasn't changed much. You know, multifamily is still very strong. I probably won't touch any of the, we had a couple challenges with some of our B-C+ properties, because once you get into that kind of tenant base, we've had issues with people taking illegal advantage of the eviction moratoriums. So that's been a little bit of a challenge for us. So I probably would hold off on those properties for a little while longer. But aside from that, you know, industrial has been strong. Multifamily has been strong. I think office, I would stick with suburban office. I've been a big fan of suburban office. We have 3 suburban office deals. They've all been paying out beautifully. And from April, I've been saying that I think the big push here, because of this whole work from home thing, no one wants to work from home, but no one wants to commute. So the big answer is suburban office. I think suburban office is going to be, it's going to be a very strong asset class for a while to come. And I've seen other people a lot smarter than me saying the same thing. You know, we have a self-storage deal now. Self-storage is always hot. It's very, very local. You got to be very careful with it. So it's got to really make sense very locally. But where it makes sense, it's you're just like building gold. And I'm starting to look more into the debt markets, because I've seen from my investor base, there is an interest in shorter term stuff. Some people are becoming afraid to lock up money. Mm-hmm. So with the right kind of debt deals, you can get some really nice returns with a shorter hold with nice LTVs. And in light of all the craziness going on in America, I've started exploring other opportunities outside, kind of like a longer term thing, not to invest in immediately, but to kind of expose myself to understand the markets in other places, because opportunities are everywhere, you know.
When you say opportunities in other places, you mean outside of the United States?
Outside of the United States, either in real estate or something else. Look, my goal is never to build. There's some people, and I'm not knocking it. It's great. And people do it. And I piggyback on it. They want to build, you know, $100 million in assets, or like 1,000 doors in their management, and build these real estate empires. And that's great. And I have not, all respect to them, all power to them. My goal is to create a place where people could come and build their nest egg and build a financial future, build passive income. Real estate is a great way to do that. If I can find a way to do that with, I don't know, startup investments, I would do it too.
Mm-hmm. It's less predictable. I guess it's all really just a risk.
I'm just throwing out a name there. My point is startup investments are way out there because of the risk involved. My point is, if there are ways to find secure investments that aren't in real estate, I'm okay with that. If real estate's not in the US, I can find it somewhere else and it makes sense, I'm good with that too. Real estate is great. There are other opportunities out there. And given the challenges and given what's happening in the US, you know, will the US still be a real estate powerhouse in 10 years? You know, probably, but is there a chance it won't be? Who knows? You know, I don't want to be the guy who just becomes a one trick pony, who's all stuck in one place, and then all of a sudden, you know, the world shifts and you're still, all I know is real estate in the US.
Interesting. It's a very different perspective than we hear from a lot of people. And I appreciate that. Now there to, you know, just to build on that for a second, if you don't mind, a lot of people, like you said, are focused and they have, you know, only multifamily, only this. And, you know, one thing that I really like about you and your investment platform is that you have a lot, even within real estate, you have a lot of diversification, right? You had retail, office, multifamily, different asset classes, self-storage. Now there's a lot going on there. So it's not just like, even within real estate, which you could call a one trick pony, right?
Right.
you know, there are people that are very hyper-focused. You are less so. So it makes sense in a way to even expand that further.
Yeah. Early on in my career, or my, I shouldn't say before my career, early on in my journey, you know, sometimes you have these phrases, you hear it and just like a light bulb goes off, like a whole new world opens up in front of you. So for me, that phrase was multiple streams of income. I heard that phrase and it was like, wow, like that's it. That's what I want. And what it means, multiple streams of income doesn't just mean having, you know, 1,000 doors, because if all of it is dependent on the same underlying performance, it's not really multiple. It's really a single stream of income.
That could be argued.
Multiple streams of income, you have to be, you know, if one fails, something else is going to work.
Mm-hmm.
So this past, I won't call it a recession, but this past downturn, our best performing asset that we had in our portfolio was office, not multifamily. Our collections in office were at 100%, you know? And look, everyone in multifamily, which scares me the most, and this is not, I don't step at night with this, you know, in February and March, I really didn't sleep much, but this doesn't keep me up at night, but multifamily has been on a great run for many, many years, right? You know, and it should continue, but what happens if something changes and all of a sudden multifamily fails? You know? Like nothing is bulletproof.
Mm-hmm.
So I like to be a little bit spread out.
A little bit contrarian. Okay. We're not going to, we're not going to go deep further in that, because we could open up that argument, but for the sake of time, I really want to jump here into the final four. These are four questions that we ask all our guests at the end of this episode of Weiss Advice. David, first question for you is, what is the worst job that you ever had?
Probably working in my company.
Working in your own company?
Yeah, you got to do everything. You know, you got to do everything. Until you start hiring, which thank God we're doing now, you got to do every little thing, whether you're good at it or not, whether you enjoy it or not.
The
company is a very demanding job, which doesn't allow you to offload anything.
Being an entrepreneur, it has its challenges, that's for sure.
So if you can segment, I would say those are the things I hire for.
I hear that. That's good. Well, I'm glad to hear that your worst job is your current job.
No, I already hired somebody.
So you hired someone else. All right, but it's now on him.
Yeah.
What is the what's a book you've read that's given you a paradigm shift?
I can't remember the name of it right now. It was a book about stock trading, and it was all about thinking in probabilities. And I can't remember the name of the book, to save my life right now. It's all about mindset and thinking in probabilities, and how you internalize that way of thinking. And once you think that way, it just, you go about making decisions in such a different manner.
Okay. We'll have to come back to that. We'll see if we can get that in there somehow in the show notes. Once we'll follow up on that.
I'll have to look it up. Yeah.
We'll look it up. Third question. What is a skill or talent that you would like to learn?
I'd like to learn.
Mm-hmm. I know you've done a lot of things, and you know, I remember a couple of years ago you started to learn coding, and you just, you know,
I use it that up. And I use it every day.
It's incredible.
What would I like to learn? I guess what I'm working on now the most is to learn how to manage a team. That's kind of my most active skill right now. And so I'm working on it at the moment.
Well, there you go. Then that's something you should continue working on and get really good at. Yep. Keep building it out. Fourth question, what does success mean to you?
I mean, real success is not in business. Real success is not, you can start talking about, you know, building out companies and investing and all that great stuff. But success for me is very personal. It's very much in my religious life and in my family. And those are the key metrics of success.
Amazing. Amazing. Beautiful answer. And final question is, where can our listeners find you or reach out to you?
All right. So I have my website, YDLP. That's Y then a D, not a T, YDLPinvestments.com. Most of my stuff is there. I have a new podcast, Think Wealthy Podcast. That's available wherever you get your podcast, iTunes, Google, Spotify. And I hang out on LinkedIn and BizFluence.
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 There you go. That's the second time we've had that dropped here. First one was from the man himself, Well, so thank you very much, David. It's been a pleasure speaking with you, as always. It really is. And
I'll have to coffee sometime soon.
Yeah, we definitely have to jump for a coffee one of these days. And to our listeners, thank you again for joining us. And remember, the best advice comes only when you ask. Real quick, I have one question for you. Did you like this episode? If you did, I want to ask you a huge favor. See, the biggest thing that helps this podcast grow and that will spread this message to the whole world is that if you leave a review, a rating, and subscribe to the podcast. What that does is it basically tells the platforms that this podcast is out on is that you like my stuff and I'm doing something right. So take a few seconds out of your day, hit that subscribe button, leave a rating or review. I would be extremely grateful. Also, I want to hear from you guys. So I want to hear some feedback. If you have any questions for future episodes, please find me on LinkedIn. Send me a DM, a connection request, Yona Weiss, and I'd love to hear from you.